Hey folks, Preet here. This is a recording of my weekly note, The Stench. As always, please send your thoughts and questions to letters@cafe.com. Dear listener, yesterday all eyes, or at least all ears, were on the Supreme Court's oral argument in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health, the case involving a Mississippi statute that would ban abortion after 15 weeks in direct contravention of Roe v. Wade. As predicted, though, the heart of the argument was more about precedent and stare decisis than about abortion itself. Why is that? It's because the court is not a Congress. What do I mean by that? Well, a Congress, or any legislature for that matter, is made up of voting representatives who, while they may follow individual ideologies and philosophies of legislating, act collectively by voting for or against statutes. They can vote a law into being one year, amend it the next, and repeal it altogether anytime after that. Certain laws that are controversial and narrowly passed are in constant jeopardy of alteration and appeal because it is a purely political body that passes such laws. See, for example, the Affordable Care Act. When a legislature does away with a law, it does so without apology, hand-wringing, or special justification. It's all about the new policy preference, and it's all about the votes. These undoing principles apply, by the way, not just to ordinary statutes, but also to our nation's charter, the Constitution. For example, in 1919, the 18th Amendment prohibited the manufacture, sale, and transportation of alcohol. Boy, did that turn out to be a mess. And so 14 years later, in 1933, the 21st Amendment undid the 18th. And that was that. There was a new policy preference, and the liquor lobby had the votes. And whoever has the votes wins. Cheers. But courts are supposed to be different. Even the Supreme Court. Sure, Supreme Court justices vote also, but the principles of undoing are not nearly the same. Unlike a past statute, a clear Supreme Court precedent, and especially what some term a super precedent, is not to be cast aside casually. When a longtime precedent like Roe is challenged, as Mississippi has challenged it in the Dobbs case, there must be a special justification, some seismic shift in science or social understanding. This is in part because people come to rely on constitutional rights that the Supreme Court specifically articulates. Such special justifications were sorely lacking in yesterday's discussion. Nothing material has changed since 1973 with respect to abortion. As one of the respondents' lawyers argued, Mississippi, quote, makes the same exact arguments the court already considered and rejected in its stare decisis analysis in Casey, end quote, back in 1992. In other words, there's nothing new. Yes, on rare occasions, the Supreme Court overturns a precedent. The court's decisions are not eternal commandments, but when it does so, it must have special reasons. The respondent's brief put it well, quote, unless the court is to be perceived as representing nothing more than the preferences of its current membership, it is critical that judicial protection hold firm, absent the most dramatic and unexpected changes in law or fact, end quote. Without dramatic and unexpected changes in law or fact, a decision to uphold the Mississippi abortion ban and effectively gut Roe, the court would be acting like a Congress. Just as Kavanaugh and others invoked prior well-known examples of the court overruling precedents, in part because the conservative justices don't want to look like they're acting merely like a legislature. He mentioned Brown, which overruled Plessy, Lawrence v. Texas, which overruled Bowers, and several others. What he did not mention is that in virtually all of those cases, the court was overruling bad precedents in favor of expanding individual liberty. Overruling Roe would accomplish the opposite. But at least the justices were giving some lip service to the principles of stare decisis. On the Insider podcast this week, Joyce and I made fun of a passage in Mississippi's brief, which wholly and comically elided the challenge presented by the stubborn existence of the Roe and Casey precedents. Quote, this case is made hard only because Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood of Southern Pennsylvania v. Casey hold that the Constitution protects the right to abortion, end quote. Oh, as if that wasn't the entire ballgame. As one Insider listener posted on Twitter, climbing mountains is only made hard because they are so high and mountainous. Breathing in outer space is only made hard because there's no air. Mississippi doesn't need to care about making silly arguments if Mississippi believes it has the votes. This dynamic reminds me of the debate about Donald Trump's two Senate trials following impeachment. In no respect were those trials, in any meaningful sense of the term, particularly in connection with the second impeachment, centered on the incitement to violence on January 6th. There was no real presiding judge. The jurors were all partial partisans who also doubled as victims and witnesses. No rules of evidence applied, and barely any rules of procedure. The fix was in. It was all about the votes. And so it seems with abortion now in 2021. What's changed since 1973 is the personnel on the court. In the case of Trump's trials, we saw a legislature masquerading as a court, but acting like the political body that it is. In the case of Dobbs, we see an actual court masquerading as a court, but acting like the political body it is becoming. In phrasing that will long be etched in my brain, Justice Sotomayor asked the ultimate rhetorical question, will this institution survive the stench that this creates in the perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts? I fear not. My best, Preet.